Are you looking for COVID-19 testing? Picture Genetics is now offering FDA-authorized test kits, and you don't have to leave the house. The kits are shipped directly to your home. Ordering only takes a few minutes by answering some questions about any exposures or symptoms you may have had or currently having. You can order your kit directly at picturegenetics.com. Again, that's picturegenetics.com to get your COVID-19 test kit. Thank you to Picture Genetics for providing such an important service during this pandemic and for sponsoring our Direct Consumer series.
How is it that we find ourselves surrounded by such complexity, such elegance?
The genes of you and me, the genes of you and me, we're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA. We're all made of DNA.
Hello, you're listening to DNA Today, a genetics podcast and radio show. I'm your host, Kira Dineen. On this show, we explore genetics and how it impacts our health through conversations with leaders in genetics, such as fellow genetic counselors, researchers, doctors, patient advocates, and many other voices in the scientific community. This episode continues our direct consumer genetic testing series, so be sure to check out all the previous episodes at dnapodcast.com or search DNA Today in your podcast app. Today, we are hearing directly from one of the largest DTC companies in the world, 23andMe. Joining me for this conversation is Anne Greb, who is a genetic counselor and serves as the lead of the medical education team at 23andMe. In this role, she's responsible for developing educational initiatives that equip healthcare providers to better integrate personalized genetic information into the everyday care of their patients. Previously, Anne was the program director of three genetic counseling programs, Wayne State University, Long Island University, and Sarah Lawrence College. She also directed the medical genetics course taken by first-year medical students at Wayne State University. Heads up, 23andMe is doing a giveaway to go along with this episode. To enter, go to DNA Today's Twitter and Facebook at DNA Podcast and our Instagram at DNA Radio, and look for the post of a picture of a 23andMe kit with simple instructions to enter this giveaway. Don't miss your chance to win this free DNA kit. You can also go to Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram and just search DNA Today, and you'll end up finding the post there. It's a pleasure to have you on the episode today, Anne. Thanks so much for taking the time and joining the program.
It's my pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
So to give some people some perspective about your career and now being at 23andMe, you were the program director at Genetic Counseling Master's Program that was at Wayne State, Long Island University, Sarah Lawrence, which we just missed each other there. What led you to transition to joining 23andMe? What drew you to want to be part of the team?
You know, I get asked that question a lot, and I do need to say I absolutely loved being a program director, and I do. Every day I miss the students that I was able to work with. But I think the answer to that question, there's really two parts of it. The first part, I am really fascinated by this interest that the general public has in personal genetic testing. Never in a million years, if I sort of look back, fast forward, would I have thought that sort of genetics, that this is a space that we would be, that so many people would be engaged and so many people would be interested in learning about their genetic information. And there's lots of reasons why, you know, people pursue personal genetic testing. But I just really see opportunities. I see opportunities to educate the general public about genetics and genomics. And I think genetic counselors have a really important role in this movement, if we want to call it a movement. So I just really wanted to be a part of it, and I wanted to learn more about it. The second reason is a big part of my career, I also is dedicated to educating healthcare providers, primarily medical students, about genetics. And I know firsthand that they just don't get very much genetics education in their medical curriculum. And I see an opportunity now, because when do you learn genetics? When do you learn anything in life as adults? It's when it's relevant and when it's important. And I see the primary healthcare provider workforce right now. People are coming in, their patients are coming in and asking them about their DTC genetic test results. And so they really do have an opportunity now to learn genetics. There's a reason to learn genetics. And that really is the focus of my role here at 23andMe, is to do educational activities, really to help primary care providers answer our customer questions about their DTC genetic test results.
And it's helpful for those healthcare professionals, either genetic counselors, geneticists, or people that are outside of that genetic expert area to have a better understanding of consumers' motivations for pursuing DTC genetic testing, as you were kind of hinting at earlier. What do you see like now in this role of being much more exposed to DTCs? What are the most common reasons people are seeking out doing this form of testing?
Yeah, and that is certainly an area I've learned a lot more about, and not just sort of like the list of reasons people are interested in having a personal genetic test, but really sort of understanding kind of the reasons why and why it's relevant to their lives. And I think as genetic counselors, one thing early on that we learned that we really do value the unique perspective each patient brings in terms of, you know, all of our patients have their own values, their own belief systems, sort of what motivates them to pursue or not pursue genetic testing is all very different. And that's what makes our role and our jobs, you know, really fascinating and interesting. And I think what I've had to do or what I've been, had the opportunity to do is really sort of look at the reasons customers pursue personal genetic testing. And then really, how is that relevant, I think, to us as genetic counselors? And one of the two top reasons, Kira, is actually people are interested in ancestry. People are interested in genealogy. But I think if we think about that as genetic counselors, there's certainly relevant information. We know how important ethnicity is in terms of understanding risk factors. And then we also know that people, you know, they're interested in their identity. They're interested in celebrating sort of who they are and where they came from and what are their traditions and what are their, you know, the group that they came from, their religious beliefs and stuff like that. And as genetic counselors, it's all about cultural competency. It's all about really understanding their worldview and their perspective. In terms of the health information, again, that's another top reason customers are interested in personal genetic testing. And I think they see the potential in genetics. I mean, I think some of the motivations may be a little premature. And I think just in genetics in general, we still have a ways to go, I think, for things to really have pure clinical utility, really make a difference in terms of healthcare. But I think people see the potential. And I think people see that it does give them information. And if you look at sort of the top types of health conditions people are interested in, they're interested in knowing about the risk for breast cancer. They're interested in knowing about their risk for heart disease. And people really want to know about Alzheimer's disease, which again, there's a lot of controversy. And I think us as genetic counselors have opinions about whether or not that is valuable. But for a lot of people, there is what we call personal utility. There really is value in, for them personally to know that information.
And with people doing this type of testing, you know, direct consumer, they're doing it directly. They're picking up a kit and being able to, you know, swab or spit or whatever the form is now and send it in. It kind of goes into how with so many people doing this, how is this going to be integrated into like routine medical care? Because it's not just a few people doing this. It's like a big chunk of the population and growing and growing. How do you see it being integrated, or what ways would you like to see it going as we're starting to explore this area?
Yeah, another really great question. I mean, in 2019, 26 million people have had a direct-to-consumer genetic test. So yes, they've been able to sort of facilitate their own genetic testing experience without the input of a healthcare provider. And it is, as you described, really submitting a saliva sample through a kit, sending it in the mail, and 2 to 4 weeks later, they're able to access their sort of protected portal on the website and really view and look at their genetic information. And we know that 30% of customers who undergo a DTC genetic test do take the information to their healthcare provider. And I do work a lot with really reaching out to primary care providers, family medicine doctors, internal medicine, nurse practitioners, physician's assistants. And these healthcare providers really do have a good relationship with their patients in terms they have ongoing care and they know their patients and they know oftentimes their patients' families. And, you know, they're getting questions and they want to know, you know, how do we answer the questions and how do we sort of integrate this into our practice? And I really think there are opportunities. Certainly any relevant test information is important. If a customer identifies that they do have, you know, a variant in a BRCA1 or 2 gene, obviously that's clinically significant. But I think my message to primary care providers is this is a really good opportunity if patients bring it up or maybe even ask them if they've had a consumer sort of genetic test and ask them, what were their motivations? You know, were they interested or did they have it because of a concern about their family history? And I think it's a really good opportunity then to update the family history information, to ask their patient about their family history, because oftentimes, as we all know as genetic counselors, a DTC genetic test such as 23andMe's health and ancestry test is really not intended for people that have an increased risk for a genetic condition based on their family history. Those people certainly need to have clinical genetic testing based on their specific indication. So it is an opportunity for our primary care providers to sort of do that family history screen to see if their patient, was this the right test or should they be referred for genetic counseling and more specific genetic testing. I think it's an opportunity to ask about ancestry information, about ethnicity. Again, that has relevance certainly from a healthcare perspective. And then another thing I think people don't sometimes think about is one of the big motivators, as we talked about, is ancestry. But another motivator that's becoming more and more popular is people are interested in finding family relationships, or sometimes they find out about family relationships that they didn't anticipate or didn't know existed. And I think this is a very important role for healthcare providers to ask their patients, was there any information you found out that you didn't anticipate? Did you find about relatives you didn't know about? Did you ask them about their health information? It's a way, again, to sort of expand and get more comprehensive family history information. And then I think to also talk about, you know, just the ramifications of identifying and finding out about information that, you know, their patient perhaps didn't anticipate or didn't know about.
And with all this information, for so many people that are doing this type of testing, they may not have done any type of testing if it wasn't for this direct consumer model of maybe they don't have something that is going to bring them in to see a healthcare provider and they're doing it for fun or whatever their like other reasons are and motivations for doing it. And then it may bring up information that then leads them to have these conversations with maybe starting with their GP and kind of moving from there. So it's an interesting perspective to bring it up that I think it's not a way that a lot of people, you know, in our field in genetic counseling kind of we'll talk about of like, this is reaching people that may not be reached otherwise and starting those conversations and starting that education process. I was surprised. So 30% of people are bringing this to like their GPs. Is that what you were saying earlier?
Yes, that's what several studies have shown. And those studies are actually a couple years old. So I anticipate the number is probably even higher than that. But I think, Carrie, you bring up a really important point. And the way that I think as adults, how we learn, we have to sort of new technologies or new things that come about, we have to sort of relate them to things that we already know. And so the way that I sort of think about direct-to-consumer genetic testing, personal genetic testing, is really like a screening test. And, you know, genetic screening has been around, you know, with newborn screening and carrier screening and prenatal screening. I mean, this is, again, a concept we're very familiar with. And you'll find even primary care providers are familiar with the concept of screening. And so screening tests are really meant to be offered to healthy populations. They're meant to be offered to people who otherwise aren't identified at increased risk, right? A screening test is not meant for somebody who already you can identify that they have an increased risk. Those patients really need to go and then do more comprehensive testing. Screening tests should be widely available. Oftentimes they're broad, they're non-targeted, they're not meant to be comprehensive. They need to be not very expensive. Again, a very expensive screening test doesn't make sense from a population health standpoint. And again, they're not meant to be diagnostic. And we know absolutely there are people who otherwise wouldn't have had a clinical indication for genetic testing. Either it just wasn't picked up, or their family history isn't suggestive, or they have a small family history, or they're adopted, or they're donor conceived. I mean, I think we can think of lots of reasons why someone wouldn't be a candidate or wouldn't be identified as increased risk for a genetic condition. And so this is exactly the type of test that can pick up a subset of these individuals who otherwise, you know, really wouldn't have been brought to the attention of the genetics community or healthcare providers. And we're seeing that. We did a study that we actually presented at the San Antonio Breast Cancer Conference a year ago, where we looked at a population of our BRCA1 and 2 carriers. And sure enough, half of those were male and half of those were female. And I think we oftentimes forget about the male carriers, which is exactly what you would expect. It's an autosomal dominant condition. And then there were a fair number of people who did not identify as Ashkenazi Jewish, but actually had genetically detected Ashkenazi Jewish ancestry and did obviously have a variant. So again, how would those individuals have ever known that they even had a risk if they hadn't done sort of a personal genetic test?
And you bring up a good point with the BRCA testing, of that being something that 23andMe offers in your direct consumer testing. I'm curious in terms of how you are educating people and really being able to express this information of, as genetic counselors, we understand these topics and that BRCA testing, you have to look at how many variants are looked at. And from my understanding, 23andMe looks at the three variants you were mentioning that are common in the Ashkenazi Jewish community. But there are about 1,000 variants that could be existing that are less common, but that people can have those variants that can lead them to be a carrier for BRCA1 or 2, the two genes. How does 23andMe make sure that consumers understand this, that 23andMe is looking at three variants as opposed to the entire gene?
Correct. Yeah, this is, I've done a lot of genetics education in my career, and this is one of the most challenging concepts, I think, for a lot of people to understand. Certainly our patients, we spend a lot of time explaining this in a genetic counseling session. It's something I spend a lot of time trying to help healthcare providers understand kind of the limitations and what does sort of a negative genetic test mean? What are the implications of that? And so I think this is something at 23andMe that we work really hard and provide a lot of educational resources, which are included in the report itself. And if anyone's interested in looking at the sort of the educational content of one of our reports, including the BRCA1 and 2 selected variants report, we do have copies on our healthcare provider's website. And we have tutorials, we have resources in our customer support center. Patients oftentimes call our customer support center because they have questions about their test results. Well, certainly there are people available who can help explain limit, you know, sort of the meaning of a negative variant. And then certainly if something is positive, what to do about that. One thing I think that people is important that I didn't appreciate or didn't really understand as fully until I got to 23andMe is just the rigorous process that 23andMe has to go through in order to have one of their reports sort of be FDA authorized to be marketed to consumers. So in addition to things such as making sure our tests are accurate, making sure that the genotype is related to some sort of clinical, potential clinical diagnosis or phenotype, we also had to prove that customers could understand the information in the reports. And so this consumer comprehensive, the studies that actually we haven't done, outside groups did this, really did many focus groups and had many different reports. And they had to sort of, you know, have participants in the focus groups really read the information and then do studies and tests to make sure that they understand. And one of the biggest factors that was important is do people understand the meaning of a negative variant report? So if we weren't able to convince the FDA that consumers were able to understand this information, we wouldn't have been able to get the FDA authorization. I think it's something, again, all of us need to continue to educate about genetic testing, about what it means and about the limitations and is it the right test? I mean, this is things I think as genetic counselors we're very good at doing. But at 23andMe, we recognize just how important it is for people to understand this information.
And going to the lengths to have FDA approval, I was looking around and trying to educate myself on how DTCs stand with the FDA, and definitely correct me here, is 23andMe the only direct consumer that has the FDA approval?
So the FDA regulates the whole topic of sort of regulation of genetic tests is an interesting topic. Again, something I've learned a lot about. So the FDA does regulate certain categories of direct-to-consumer genetic tests, and it's these categories that the FDA feels do actually have a higher impact on medical care. And so those categories, there's four of them. And if you look at the FDA website, they're, you know, they're sort of listed very clearly. So one category are the genetic health risk tests. Those are mostly the single gene conditions. Another category is carrier screening. A third category is cancer predisposition. And then the last category is pharmacogenetics. And 23andMe does have FDA authorization to market direct-to-consumer genetic tests in each of these four categories. And yes, Kira, we are the only company that has the FDA authorization. No other company really has gone through that rigorous process.
Yeah, it took me a while to like learn and hearing from Laura Hersher, who looks a lot about, you know, DTCs and her writing and everything, that it's interesting to kind of get the different perspectives and understand how it all works. And then as soon as you learn it, everything changes. So it's hard to keep up with.
Yeah.
And in the genetic testing and genetic counseling community, there has been criticism of DTC testing and a lot of different opinions and views. And this is a very controversial area within the field. And one of those concerns is just the accuracy. And we talked about this a little bit with the screening, which is, I like phrasing that way in terms of DTCs to kind of quickly express kind of the purpose of DTCs and how they can be used. I was reading the 2018 paper from Ambry that cited 40% of DTC results were inaccurate, being false positives. Now, the sample size of this was very small. It was only 49. So this is like a tiny study. And I imagine there's going to be a lot more. But I'd like to hear more of your insight on larger scale of just the accuracy of testing of when someone gets a positive. Again, we're kind of looking at the screening area, and that's our mindset here. But is this something that people should then be getting medical grade testing? I mean, how accurate is this? And like, what are the next steps for patients to be taking from there?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I there was a lot of confusion about the Ambry study. I think it is an important study. And I think it's certainly a study we should pay attention to. But I think where people are confused, or where there isn't clearly made a distinction in the test, that So the genetic health risk tests and the carrier screening and the cancer predisposition and the pharmacogenetic test that we offer directly to our consumers. So a consumer buys a kit, they submit a sample, you know, they wait the 2 to 3 weeks to get their results, and then they go into their 23andMe, you know, password protected portal, and they actually look at their test results that we have given to them based on tests that are FDA authorized to do. These tests, again, have gone through a rigorous process, and we have demonstrated, you know, with 99.9% accuracy that we're looking for very specific, the presence or absence of very specific well-known variants that we know do have a high impact. Those results are accurate. Again, the FDA would not allow us to market these tests to consumers if they were not accurate. Now, what most consumer-driven genetic testing companies and even clinical labs and most of the genetic research studies that are looking at population genetic screening, whole exome sequencing, most of those entities actually do allow their customers, their patients, to download the raw data. And 23andMe, we believe people own their genetic information and they have a right to their genetic information. And it is one of the motivators why people sometimes do a direct-to-consumer genetic test, is they do want access to their raw data and they do want to do further exploration. Either it's because they're looking for relatives, or they're in search of an answer, you know, about a disease, you know, on this diagnostic odyssey. I think we're all, you know, sort of familiar with what patients sometimes go through to get a diagnosis. But it's really important to understand that though that data has not been validated, right? It's raw data. It hasn't gone through an editing process. And so for customers or patients who take that information and upload it to a third-party interpretive service, there certainly are issues about accuracy. It could be accuracy with the data itself. It could be how the third-party interpretive services interprets the data. There's just a lot of issues or problems around it. So the Ambry study, they looked at the raw data and found that 40% of the raw data was not accurate. And so this just, I think, reinforces that this information should certainly not be used for diagnostic purposes. I think genetic counselors have a really important role to sort of help patients sort through this. But this is not, I think it's not an accurate statement to say all of DTC testing, 40% of it is not accurate. That's just not a true statement.
So there is a huge distinction then between the testing that are the reports from 23andMe, which have been, you know, the sequencing or what the variants you're looking at is being done in terms of like the genetic test. And then that information is looked at by a genetic expert, a data analyst, or whatever their title is. And then that is the report that gets sent to the consumer. So that's the first one. And then the second one is that you can find extra information in this raw data, but that's not the part that is FDA approved. That's just extra information that you're providing consumers because you're like, well, we have this information, so we're being transparent. So it's that's huge. And I think that's, for me, when I was reading it, that wasn't is clear for like where the distinction was. And I think that's major in terms of when people are getting a report from 23andMe, that being accurate and FDA approved. And it's that raw data where that's more of an unknown and more of preliminary data.
Right. And I think that is an important distinction. And people, unfortunately, oftentimes when they're presenting this data, they are not making that distinction. And it's not that 23andMe gives people the information. They give people the raw data. They take that raw data and they go elsewhere to seek information. So we're really not interpreting that data for them at all. It really is the raw data that they take elsewhere. And it's other resources that are interpreting it for them. And that's where the inaccuracies. Again, it's raw data. It's not meant, I mean, it hasn't been validated. It hasn't gone through, you know, the same sort of quality control measures that a clinical test has gone through or our FDA authorized tests have gone through.
Just like we see in research. Exactly.
Exactly. That's a good analogy. That's a really good analogy.
Yeah, you have to have people actually look through it and have the bioinformatics team. And that's a whole setup of most genetic counselors are not well-versed in that, but that's kind of a different department or an extra skill set you may learn. But yeah, interesting just to hear like the nuances there and just how important they are to be able to mm-hmm. understand the impact of studies like that. And, you know, I'm sure many to come as DTCs are really exploding. Before we sign off, I did want to ask, we've touched on it a bit of the information for healthcare providers to be talking about with their patients when they're bringing in this test report. But if we're zeroing in on genetic counselors, this is something that more and more so patients are coming in to our genetic counseling offices and bringing DTC reports with them. What is your advice or tips for genetic counselors on how to handle this? What information to tell patients? How can 23andMe kind of help genetic counselors? Because there's so many people that are starting to do this now.
Yeah, I love that question. And I really have enjoyed sort of thinking about that. And I think I'm not sure I have all the answers to that questions, but I really have thought about, as genetic counselors, I think we do have an important role. I think the challenge is, you know, a lot of our traditional genetic counseling goals, I mean, oftentimes what we do in a session is we explain how inherited diseases and conditions may affect, you know, our clients and their families and, you know, how the family and medical history sort of impacts the chance of disease. You know, what's the right genetic test, you know, for clients and who should be tested. And also we spend a lot of time, you know, making sure people make informed choices about testing and then help them adapt to whatever situation that they're in. I think some of the challenges for us as genetic counselors is sort of goal setting and that contracting when you're working with a patient who comes in because of an issue around a consumer-driven or direct-to-consumer genetic test is, you know, sometimes those motivations for personal genetic testing oftentimes are outside of the traditional scope of genetic counseling, because oftentimes they're not health related and there's more of that sort of personal utility. The decision to have genetic testing has already been made. And again, that's a big part of what we do is help people sort of navigate that decision. Well, you know, the decision's already been made. You know, I think with DTC genetic testing, some of the expectations that consumers that our patients have do have limited clinical utility. And, you know, I think from our standpoint, they may seem unrealistic, or they may seem like, you know, it's a little premature in terms of where genetics is at, in terms of, again, really having that clinical utility piece. I think the information that consumers obtain from genetic testing can be overwhelming. And, you know, sometimes you're just not prepared for potential results. And as we know, the family and medical history hasn't been incorporated into the genetic testing process. So a lot of sort of the tools that we have and the way that we're sort of used to navigating and conducting a session and really addressing the patient's concerns are just really different. And I think it's a matter of just like looking at our genetic counseling process and really how can we adapt the genetic counseling process, I think, to better fit, I think, the needs and goals of patients who have questions related to consumer-driven genetic testing. It really is, you know, we have the skill set. It's really, I think, just a different application. And I think we also have to just come to grips with the fact that, you know, we really are not the gatekeepers of genetic testing. I think in the past we were, and there were a lot of good reasons for that, but we're not anymore. And people are having genetic testing, but we still are there. And we still have a very important role to really help people adapt and understand and make sense of this information and how is it relevant to their lives.
I think that's very well said and a great note to end on. Appreciate you coming on the show and also just interesting hearing from someone working in industry of coming from having, you know, a lot of different roles in your career and being able to be in this new role in industry and being able to explore that. I think it's great for people to hear because more and more genetic counselors are working in industry and sometimes straight out of grad school. So I think it's great for younger genetic counselors to hear how your role is going and everything. So thank you so much, Anne.
Thanks, Kira. I really enjoyed, and it's genetic counseling is the best profession ever. I've just, every job I've had, I've really loved and have enjoyed, and I'm really enjoying my role here. Thank you.
I can definitely second that. We're a little biased, but yes, genetic counseling really is great and so versatile, as you know, we see your career and so many others. So thanks so much, Anne.
You're welcome.
Don't forget to enter our giveaway for a free 23andMe kit. Simply search DNA Today on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and look for the post of a picture with a 23andMe kit. There's instructions on there to enter the giveaway. Part of that is following 23andMe on platforms, and it's simply at 23andMe. And for the healthcare providers listening to this episode, or if you're curious, you can go to 23andMe.com/medical, where there is information tailored for healthcare providers to learn more about the kits. As always, you can go to dnapodcast.com to listen to over 125 episodes of the show. Not all of them are available in the podcast app because we just have too many now. And feel free to send in any questions for myself or Anne into info@dnapodcast.com. We love answering your questions. And a final favor, please rate and review in your podcast app, especially Apple Podcasts. It truly helps the show grow, and we so appreciate it. Don't forget, Picture Genetics is providing COVID-19 testing. Their usual kits are for family planning, newborn health, personal wellness, and disease risk. But in an effort to help during this pandemic, they have added COVID-19 kits to their services. You can order your own kit by going to picturegenetics.com. Previously, I did the Picture Parenting Kit to learn about my own carrier status for some autosomal recessive conditions that I could potentially pass on to my future kids. And now I ordered a COVID-19 test myself. It was really easy. I just answered if I had any symptoms and what type of settings I'm in terms of my exposure level. And just a couple days after, my kit arrived in the mail. You can get your own COVID-19 testing kit at picturegenetics.com. And thank you to Picture Genetics for sponsoring our DTC series here on DNA Today and providing this very important testing. As I mentioned, they have numerous other kits where you can use code DNA Today at checkout for 25% off and free shipping. Go check it out, picturegenetics.com. Thanks for listening, and join me next time to learn and discover new advances in the world of genetics.
We're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA.